Shabbat Shalom. Today is the 14th day, which is 2 weeks of the count of the Omer, counting towards Pentecost. Before I start, I'd like to express a word of thanks to Christine for the message she delivered last Shabbat. It was, I knew why she chose that theme, and it was most appropriate. Thank you, Christine. This coming week, we're marking three important, significant dates. Two of them are national, one is personal. Tomorrow, my wife and I celebrate our 35th anniversary. On Wednesday, we shall mourn for the fallen in Israel's wars. On Thursday, we shall be celebrating the rebirth of Israel as a nation, as a state. I was here then. In fact, I've been here since 20 years before the state came into being. I'd like to read something to you from what you call the Old Testament, which reminds me of a certain lady, a Jewish lady from a very secular family who knew nothing about Jewishness. Friends were trying to persuade her that Jesus was her Messiah. I said, well, it's in your book, the Old Testament. So she went to a Jewish bookstore and she asked for an Old Testament. And the fellow there asked her, how old do you want it to be? I would suggest that don't speak about Old Testaments when you're speaking to a Jew who does not yet know Yeshua. I'm going to read Psalm 122. Not in the King James Version, but in the King David Version. Shir ha-ma'alot le-David. Samachti be-omrim li beit Adonai ne'lech. עומדות היו רגלינו בשעריך ירושלים. ירושלים הבנויה כעיר שחוברה לה יחדיו. ששם עלו שבטים שבטי יה עדות לישראל להודות לשם אדוני. כי שם ישבו כסאות למשפט, כסאות לבית דוד. שאלו שלום ירושלים. Not pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Seek the well-being of Jerusalem. Shalu shalom Yerushalayim, yishlayu ohavayich. Yehi shalom b'cheilech, shalva b'armenotayich. Lema'an achai v're'ai, adabrana shalom bach. Lema'an beit Adonai Eloheinu, avakshat tov lach. I'll have to bore you a bit with some family history to start with. I come from a very Orthodox Jewish background. I don't know much about my maternal grandparents. They came to England in the latter part of the 19th century from Eastern Europe. One was from Poland, one from Lithuania. I know they had a grocery store, and family legend has it that I used to sit under the counter and guzzle butter, which earned me the epithet of Porky, not very kosher. I'll concentrate on the other side of the family. My father's mother, the family was originally from the Ukraine, but she was born in Hebron. In 1865, my grandfather came to the land in 1881 from the Ukraine as a 13-year-old to study in a yeshiva, a Jewish seminary. We were married. My father was born in Mea Shearim in Jerusalem in 1890. When he was three, my grandfather secured a concession of something I very hesitate to mention in Southern Baptist circles. He secured a concession to export wine from this land to England. And my mother, all her siblings were born in London. We were three brothers. My oldest brother was born in June 1919. My second brother was born in February 1924, and I was born in February 1926. 1928, my father was here on family business, contracted typhoid and died. And so my grandfather left the business in London in the hands of family. My grandparents took my mother and my us three and brought us to Jerusalem in May 1928. The very Orthodox Jewish home, but very tolerant. And in a sense, when I look back, I think that that kind of upbringing did serve as a help in coming to know the Lord. I won't give you all the entire history. I'll just deal with the actual period concerning my coming to faith in Yeshua. I was then head of the English department of the government press office. And the head office was then in Tel Aviv. And every Thursday, department heads would go down to meet at the head office in Tel Aviv. And this was Thursday, the 5th of August, 1976. After the meeting, I spent some time with one of my colleagues, and then around about 10 o'clock at night, I was sitting in a shirut, a taxi service, on the way to Jerusalem. There was somebody in the front, there were three in the back, and the middle section, I was on the right. In come two ladies, and off we go. And I didn't lose much time in engaging her in conversation. Tehila, would you like to come up and say something now? Come on.
I was on one of my trips to Israel, and it was something special about this trip. I had such a sense of urgency that I felt kind of driven to get through and get to taxi or what I needed as quickly as possible without changing money or any such things. And
there was no, that time there was no direct bus from the airport to Jerusalem.
I knew that I had to go via Tel Aviv, and I knew where to take the bus to where in Tel Aviv. So these links had to be exactly on the dot. And I just made it to the bus, and I just made it, and it was like everything was hanging in a thread. And and I got into this taxi that Dov told, also Charut, that Dov told about. The door closed, and off we went. And it was just a different kind of experience altogether. And I had this feeling that this man who started the conversation was kind of real, that he was speaking about his real work, not some fancy thing. And I was very interested in that. And I was even more interested when we got nearer up to Jerusalem. And we saw these old
skeletons of vehicles.
Vehicles that had been, you know, destroyed on the way earlier. And we saw the first houses of Jerusalem. And those said with enthusiasm, and look, there are the first houses of Jerusalem. And I thought, he had already told me so much about his work that I knew he had gone up and down between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv lots of times. And I thought, that is quite strange, because he has the same feeling of thrill, of enthusiasm when he sees Jerusalem, which I feel. And I haven't gone up and down here that many times. So that was a big thing. Anyway, that was not the meaning to tell you all the story. But I want to take the opportunity, though it may not fit in exactly here, to really thank the Lord in public and to thank you for having some kind of rootedness in this congregation, because we realize full well that it is a very special place with a very special history. Amen.
Can you manage?
Help me.
Thank you, Tina. By the way, you may wonder, those of you who don't know Hebrew, my wife's name, Tehila, means praise. And my name, Dov, means bear. Not grizzly, I did shave. But, you know, between us we bear praise unto the Lord. Anyway, she tried to share her faith with me. And I kept saying, stop those Christian phrases. But she realized that she had to go about it in a different way. Perhaps I'm saying something that you should have been saying, really, perhaps. But I blame her, actually, for leading me to this congregation. It was the only fellowship she knew at the time here. And I may mention also, before I forget, there are no membership rolls here. But we were members of this fellowship for 10 years, from 1977 to 1987. And I've never felt nowhere, in no other fellowship, congregation, anywhere, here or abroad, have I felt as comfortable as I did during those 10 years in this fellowship. But then it had to do with a very special person. As you have now, you have a Bible teaching before the service. There was one then. And the teacher, very gifted, is actually teaching from the Tanakh, the Hebrew Scriptures, in English, of course. He knew that I knew Hebrew. And he kept asking me, Is this word correctly translated? Does this passage really say what it says in the original? That is what the Lord used to get me to start to reread the Hebrew scriptures, which I had been reading from the age of 5 and given up along the years. And I kept coming across very familiar passages and seeing them in a different light. I would like to say this also. You can read and understand the Bible in any language. But if you want the real spiritual depth, I would recommend that you learn Hebrew. My knowledge of Hebrew was very crucial in my coming to faith in the Lord. The first passage which struck me, by the way, I forgot to mention one thing. When I first started attending here, there was one man standing there reading from the Hebrew scriptures in my language, reading beautifully. And I was very struck by it. He's sitting here now. David, where are you? The first passage which hit me is Exodus 33. It says there in verse 11 that God spoke to Moses face to face, as a man does to his friend. And yet in verse 20 it says that God says to him, "No man can see me and live." And I found that quite puzzling. I knew enough about Christianity by then that Christians worship somebody called Jesus. They refer to him as Son of God or second person of the Godhead. And I wonder, maybe they have something. Maybe there's one aspect of God which can never be seen by us, and yet another aspect of God that can be seen by us when he wants us to see him. Still, it's a bit puzzling. At the time, I had a King James so-called Old Testament with the Hebrew with it. And reading along, next passage that struck me in the book in which we're engaged now, Leviticus 17. I'm reading verse 11. This is from the King James, by the way. It was good enough for St. Paul, so it's good enough for me. "For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes an atonement for the soul." Continue reading. Numbers 12. Miriam and Aaron spoke up against Moses. God is angry and he calls all three out. And verse 6, God said, "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. The word rendered similitude in the Hebrew is tmuna. I've done a lot of gained a lot in translating from English to Hebrew, Hebrew to English. The word tmuna is either a portrait or an image. All these things leading to something, by the way. I'm going back a bit now. When I first met Tehila, I had been divorced for quite a few years. And by that time, I was feeling a sort of emptiness. I was missing something. I didn't quite know what. And that's why he sent her into my life. I began to appreciate the fact that all this faith in this Jesus, and I kept wondering, maybe he is a messianic figure. But somehow, how can you possibly believe that a man could become God? That is, and he was born of a woman. It takes some time to realize that it's not a man who became God, but God who chose to manifest himself as man. For that, I needed something more. I needed to see something in my book, the Tanakh. Somebody who is manifestly human, but yet must be divine. In one of those readings, came across Psalm 110. I believe it is the most quoted psalm in the New Testament. It starts with, "The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool." David here is referring to someone whom he calls my Lord. In verse 4, I'm giving you the standard rendering. "The Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek." But that's not what the Hebrew says. Before I go on, I have to point out, when you read the New Testament in English, Matthew 1:21, the angel says to Joseph, "You shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people." What possible semantic connection is there between calling him Jesus and the fact that he will save his people? But if you know Hebrew, no problem. You will call his name Yeshua, a masculine form of Yeshua, salvation. Yeshua, for he, Yoshia, will save. Melchizedek in English, no meaning. But in the Hebrew, Melchizedek. Melech is king. Tzedek is righteousness, salvation. Melchizedek, my king of righteousness. The Hebrew, and I'll give you the English, my English rendering of verse 4. The Lord has sworn and will not repent. You are a priest forever. Upon my word, Melchizedek. Nishba Adonai velo yinachem. Ata kohen le'olam al divrati, Melchizedek. Had it been al-divrat, I would have had no problem with reading it as after the order of. But al-divrati can only mean upon my word. So here God is speaking directly to this Melchizedek. Years back, at a conference in memory of Bob Lindsay, I chanced to be sitting next to Professor Safrai, and I asked him about my rendering of this verse, and he confirmed Al-Divrati can only mean upon my word. And then I asked him, but to whom does this verse refer? La Mashiach, kemovan. To the Messiah, of course. So, the person that David refers to in verse 1 as my Lord, that must be Melchizedek. And that sent me to the only other passage in the Tanakh, the Hebrew Scriptures, where this figure appears in Genesis 14. Since one has to use glasses to read. Abraham is coming back from having defeated the four kings, rescuing Lot, and the king of Sodom is coming out to meet him. And I'm going to read to you now from verse 17 of chapter 14 of Genesis. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Kedorlaomer and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Shaveh, which is the king's dale. And the king of Sodom said unto Abraham, give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. Perfect continuity, but I skipped three verses. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine. And he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thine hand. And he gave him tithes of all. Says here, Melchizedek, king of Salem. The Hebrew says, Melchizedek, Melech Shalem. I would read Melech Shalem as either complete or perfect king. It says that he is the priest of the Most High God. Abraham offers him a tithe of all, and he blesses Abraham in the name of God. Now, here's my thinking. Abraham walks and talks with God, referred to as God's friend. Actually, the word in Isaiah, Ohavi, my lover. Abraham, who is aware of a great promise coming, is he going to offer a tithe to and accept the blessings of someone even equal to himself? Highly doubtful. But someone whom he recognizes as so much greater than himself, that makes sense. Who can that be? This, for me, was the clincher. Here is somebody who is manifestly human, but must be divine. I don't know why the translation, the Septuagint, renders things differently from the Hebrew. But there is a reason. I won't go into it. In those days, aside from the Saturday morning service, we used to have a meeting Sunday evening, which Bob Lindsay considered a very special thing. And he was the man that I referred to as. He comes from a Southern Baptist background. But after he died, the Southern Baptist declared him a heretic. Yes, he was a heretic. He taught the truth. At that meeting, when I mentioned about Professor Safrai, I was asked to speak, and I mentioned that I knew two people in my lifetime who lived their lives and conducted their affairs strictly according to their faith. One of them was my grandfather, my Orthodox Jewish grandfather. The other was Bob Lindsay. Anyway, one Sunday in April of 1977, sitting in chapel then, I found myself on my feet. No volition. I don't know how. And I announced that I had no option but to accept Yeshua as Messiah, Savior, Lord. I asked for baptism then, but I determined the date, the 23rd of May, 1977, was the feast of Shavuot, the original of Pentecost, and I felt that that would be the most appropriate date for my baptism. Bob had thought of using the baptism, going to the particular church in Ein Kerem for the baptism, but certain members of the congregation rebelled. They said, no, that's not good enough. I ended up being baptized in the Jordan. When I say being baptized, I baptized myself. I didn't have somebody dunking me in the water. Wes stood there to help get coming up. But it was personal baptism upon confession of faith in front of witnesses, which is the Jewish way. And this is something that Bob had come to appreciate, because if you remember the story of Naaman, the Aramean general, was told to go and dip himself seven times in the Jordan. The word used there is exactly the same word used in the New Testament, and that gave God that gave Bob the idea that personal baptism is it. Self-immersion, correct. Self-immersion in front of witnesses. Did I become anything different? Yes. There was something different inside. But I didn't stop being Jewish. And this is one thing I will mention about Bob, this Southern Baptist minister. Unique, a very unique person, highly respected by Jews and Muslims, and what is even more surprising, by the churches here. He didn't want to change me into a Southern Baptist. All he wanted was to help the Jew find his Jewish Messiah as a Jew. I will always remember him. I miss him. And I'm sure there are others here who miss him. But I think that tells you the story. Thank you.